All, we are back. The Gunsmith Show, US 103.1, your home for ultimate classic rock. Next segment, this one's brought to you by Tri-County Roofing of Mid-Michigan. What's Tri-County Roofing? Tri-County Roofing of Mid-Michigan, that's the website.
That's right. And happy Saturday, everybody. Hopefully you got that coffee filled up and you're ready to rock and roll with us here. But rock and roll and talking about guns, and Tri-County Roofing wants you to know that if you've got a flat or low-pitched roof in your repertoire, they're your expert repair people and replacement.
A lot of commercial roofing, warehouses, churches, schools. Yep. They do shingles too, of course. They do some residential.
Yeah.
They are specialists when it comes to commercial roofing, flat roofing. They're fantastic. From 30 square to 300 square.
Yeah, a lot of churches they do. They're actually in the bidding process at my church this year. We're doing a huge new roof, and the shingles are just not holding up good on the roof. And the church is 65 years old, but the roof is in bad enough shape that they keep replacing the roof, and it costs like $200,000 or $300,000 every time they do it. They're thinking about going to something different. And Tim is trying to brainstorm to give them the exact right process. And of course, it's a big bidding process, and Catholic Church, so it's a big thing. And but he's on top of it, you know. And I trust him, and I'm glad he's there for us. So he can be there for you too. Tri-County Roofing of MidMichigan.com is the website. Go to his phone number is 810-732-7740, and you can always link to him right from my website to GSS.com. And thank him for sponsoring the show. So on my website, you can find lots of things, and you can listen to these shows over and over again and treat them just like a podcast, which is very, very handy. And we greatly appreciate Dan's ability here to produce it on a form that I can take back to the office and put right on the site. So it helps a lot. I get people call me months later and talk about shows from literally 2 or 3 years ago. And I get emails on it. So if you want to dig through them and have some fun, you're bored, you're iced in, which you might be, or you don't want to take up ice fishing and you want to do something warm inside your house, listen to a lot of old episodes of the Gunsmith Show. So
where do they listen to those?
The GSS.com. And you can also shoot me an email at shooter@thegss.com. Now, most of you know that if you listen to the show at all, I talk about 10 millimeters a lot. I love them. The 10 millimeter auto round is a ton of fun, whether it's the new Ruger lever action or if it's you got a long slide in 10 millimeter, a Glock, or a revolver. Ruger and Smith & Wesson make revolvers in 10 millimeters as well. Whatever it is, I admire that round. I like what it can do, and it's kind of mellow to shoot. It's not a huge barn burner, but it is more powerful than most of your semi-automatic handguns. Now, I gained that admiration for these 10 millimeters by literally from shooting 45 ACP and trying to get every ounce of energy squeezed out of a kind of like Bob Seger, you know, every ounce of energy.
Yes.
Yeah, you know that feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Being this is classic rock station.
Right.
So every ounce of energy squeezed out of that 45 ACP, I wanted more, and I was always trying to think, well, maybe I got to go to a 45 Winchester mag or, you know, go to a Detonix 45 or something. But no, I just 10 millimeters, when I want more than a 45, I shoot a 10. And part of it had to do with a show I used to watch. A guy named Sonny Crockett came out with that 10 millimeter, and it was like, you know, Crockett and Tubbs. Tubbs had the little wimpy 38, you know. He had to carry a shotgun as a backup. Sonny Crockett didn't need a backup. He just had his 10 millimeter Bren 10. And now try to buy one of those. You can't find them for under $2,500.
Oh, geez.
What a gun. And
What about the clothing that he wear? Did you do that too?
Yeah, I did.
The Mach T's, kind of the pastels.
Pastels, coral.
Coral, you know, jacket.
Yeah.
And a little maybe
turquoise.
A purple. Yeah,
purple. That'd work. Baggy pants.
Yeah.
Sandals.
Uh-huh.
But somewhat tactical sandals. You still got to hide
tactical
a 10 millimeter.
Tactical sandals, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's Miami, you know. It was cool. So Sonny Crockett shot the 10 millimeter course.
Right.
And that was at a point in my life when it was like, I was living in Florida. It was a ton of fun. It was I lived that life. It was
fun. Do you have
fun.
Those shades? What kind of What were the glasses?
All my glasses were
aviators.
Dark. They were dark. And, but it, you know, I suffered the smuggler's blues.
Oh yeah, all those things, of course. And, right. Yeah.
And I always had that Michigan tie. Listening to Glenn Frey, because of course he's from Royal Oak, Michigan,
right?
You know, which is most of you rock and roll aficionados know that.
Yeah.
But anyways, truly, the 45 guided me to the 10 millimeter. Now, this segment isn't all about 10 millimeters, believe it or not, and it's not about Crockett and Tubbs. It is about me and how I learned to love the 1911s. Now, and truly, my first 45 ever shot, if I remember correctly, was 1971. I think I was 6 years old. We were in Wademan, Michigan, at my uncle's sawmill. He had a big sawmill. That's what he did for a living. He had a square mile, and he logged it and made things out of the wood. He made pallets. Always had a mountain of shavings from the sawmill.
Sure.
And it was a good bullet stop. It was a big, it was, you know, it was like a 20 by 20 pile of sawdust. So Dad would put like paper plates or a chunk of wood in front of it, and we'd shoot at it.
Yep.
And it was his brother-in-law's place. And my brother and my uncle Earl was great. He was a shooter too, but not like my dad. He was more, if you shoot a gun, you're going to kill something, you're going to eat it. Or my dad was, this is a 45 ACP, and he carried it a lot. So we shot it a lot. I watched him shoot and learned the stance, the control, the squeeze, because the 1911 is a gun you have to think about. You have to squeeze it in your hand because it's got a safety on the back of the grip, and you have to squeeze and compress that, and then you can pull the trigger. But if you don't squeeze that, and there's lots of novices that grab a 1911 and go, well, what's the matter? Well, that's a hard trigger. No, you got to squeeze the back. That's a safety. And then there's another safety on the gun. So it's made for the military. It was John Browning's design. Wonderful gun. And we would shoot into this pile of wood chips, and I got to shoot it one shot at a time. Dad would put one bullet in it and let me shoot it.
Yep.
And it was a lot for a six-year-old to try to hold that gun, but it was under total strict guidance. And I get chewed out all the time because I got a picture of me and Jake up in Wellston, Michigan, at our gun range up there, and I'm holding him in my arms at one and a, he's right about 1 year old. But Jake was big. When Jake was one, he was already 33 inches tall.
Yeah.
So here's a one-year-old kid that was really just learned how to walk, and he had bruises all over his face because he walked into countertops all the time.
It was a little too high for, have a good clearance.
He was always a head taller than everybody else around him. But I was looking at baby pictures of him this week, and I just laughed at that. Boy, that brings back memories, you know. And
yeah,
we actually put a kickboxing helmet on him when he was little, so that he said he didn't hurt his head. Uh-huh. But as a kid, I got a picture. I got headphones on him, earmuffs.
I've seen the picture.
Yeah, and I got a 45 in my hand, and I'm shooting, and I'm being very cautious and careful. But I get liberals chew me out all the time for that picture. It's like, hey, you raise your kids the way you want to, and we're going to get into that a little bit later about raising kids. But the whole thing is, the 1911 has always intrigued me. I love it. I actually inherited my father, so I have that same gun that I learned how to shoot with 1971.
That's
and
cool.
For years on after that, it just made a big difference in my life. And the 45 is so iconic. I admired the power. I liked the feel of it. Plus, you saw it in every show you watched. If you watched like Voyage Beneath the Sea, Kowalski was always running around the submarine with a 45 ACP on it in a web belt, you know, on his hip. And John Wayne had them. And everybody had a 45 ACP if you weren't watching a Western. You know, it was anything about Nam. Back then, they were still using 45 ACPs in the 1911 platform. So the seed was planted. So now, 55 years later, I still light up when I hold a 1911. And whether it's in 22 caliber, 38 super, 9mm, 10mm, or 45 ACP, I still really, really enjoy them. So it doesn't matter. It's the form and function of the gun. It's not the look. It's the way it works, the way you squeeze it, the way you hold it. And I get people that come up to me and say, I can never get those 1911s to work. Well, I think they were made then in a time when men were stronger. We didn't game. We didn't play on our phones all day. We worked with our hands. We could grab a gun and squeeze it and make that safety work properly. We could grip it firmly, because the biggest problem people have with 1911s, to me, is they limp wrist them. They shoot them with a limp wrist, and the gun will stovepipe. They don't shoot them enough to know how to get through those malfunctions. And stovepiping is when you pull the trigger and there's an empty shell sticking straight up out of the top of the receiver. It looks like a stovepipe. And it happens usually because the inertia doesn't work if you don't have a good grip on that gun.
To eject the shell cleanly.
Yeah, it'll eject the shell cleanly and put the next shell in advance everything perfectly. If you do it with a limp wrist, it doesn't work good. So that's the key. I think they're made for strong hands, and to make it an effective gun, that's what it has to be. I still get people that come up and say, you can't hit the broadside of a barn with a 1911. Actually, they're one of the most accurate handguns you can fire. If you're careful with them, you can be extremely accurate. Now, they can be accurized, meaning you can take a gun in and say, I want you to make this as accurate as you can. But it's going to be minor adjustments, and it might be a different barrel. And some of these guns are over 100 years old. So the barrels need to be replaced. The springs might need to be replaced. The trigger is probably worn in pretty good at this point. And I still will sometimes, I've got some of my 1911s, the triggers are tough. It's like, that needs some work. And when I get time, I'll take them apart and fix them up. But in the meantime, don't look past the 1911 when you're out looking at handguns right now and you're thinking, well, what should be my next gun, or what kind of a gun do I want to get for training purposes? Because we have to train.
And by all means, before you buy, test one out.
Yeah, go make sure it's something that you like. And the reason why I say this, a standard 1911 carries 7 or 8 rounds. A lot of the new guns carry 16, 18, yeah. 21. That's what we used to call a lot of spraying and praying.
Right.
You shoot and shoot and shoot, and you see this all the time. You see videos of cops with looking forward but shooting backwards, getting away from an assailant, you know, or a bad guy. Mm. And if you only got 7 rounds, I'm sure you'll be more accurate.
A little bit more careful in your shot selection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's a point to ponder on the Gunsmith Show.
We'll talk some more.
Fill up that coffee.
Right after this. You listen to the Gunsmith Show here on US 103.1.